We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
It's Christmas time. We did that last time, didn't we? It's Christmas. Well, I've got to be honest, it's a weird one, isn't it, Christmas? It's a weird one this year. Who knows what's going on? We're not allowed to see each other. Santa can't even come. How mad is that? But, you know, I don't know. We'll stay in touch with each other. That's all we can do via the airwaves. And then hopefully this will pass and we'll be out the other side before you know it. I'll say this actually. There's a lot of people are saying they're putting out the phone numbers of Samaritans and things like that, and you know, anyone that's on their own at Christmas, don't feel that there's no one to turn to. And I'm going to put this out there: you can drop me a line, drop me a message. I'm on Instagram. I am Rich Wilson. We've got at Membrane Podcast, Twitter as well. I am Rich Wilson. Drop me a message if you're feeling a bit shitty. And I have no answers. I have no cures. I have no advice. But, you know, we'll have a chat and we'll make ourselves feel better. So there we are. Do that. You know, you're not alone. You are not alone. So, on to this week's guest. A controversial one this week. I wanted to get him on because he's building up a head of steam with a bid for the Christmas number one, which... how best to describe? He's a character. It's a comedy character, and people like Stuart Lee, Charlie Brooker, Nick Helm have got behind him, and they're sending his song "Boris Johnson Is a Cunt" up the charts, and even Cunt from Cunt and the Gang is surprised at how well it's done, and he's now. And I just wanted to get him on and have a chat with him. His stuff, his music, is offensive. There's no getting around it. You couldn't, I even say this in the episode, you couldn't play this to your nan. She'd be deeply offended. But the thing is, there's nuance to it. And it's ironic as well. There's irony attached to it all. He's not bigging up the things that he sings about. He's taking the piss out of some horrendous things. Because that's how, a lot of times, how we deal with stuff is by... You know, we can all sit down and we can all talk about things that have gone on in our lives and bad shit has gone on, but sometimes you need humour as well, and a lot of people use humour to deal with awfulness, and that's what Cunt and the Gang does. And I wanted to get him on. I'm going to tell you now, there will be some things discussed, like we normally do, but this is I'm talking to a comedy character. And it's, you know, there might be some things that we talk about that might be offensive, but I'm giving you the warning now. I wanted to talk to him because I wanted to see what was going on with this, with all the stuff that's going on with the Christmas number one. And, you know, so it's a bit of a departure for us. You know, I try another. I know I swear a little bit, and my, you know, my language is colourful on other episodes, but this one might be it might be near the mark for a lot of people. And like I say, the character himself might be a bit too much for some people. So tread very carefully is what I'm saying. When you go, and if you listen to this, and you go and have a look for the music, I'm just giving you the heads up. All right. I see the nuance and the irony in it, but some people won't. And I'm not saying I'm better than you and all that sort of shit. I'm just saying that's what I see. Other people might not. They might just go, that is disgraceful and disgusting, and I don't know why you've had him on. So I'm just giving you the heads up now. Just wanted to have him on and have a chat with him about what's happening. So you've been warned. You've been warned. You've been warned. Don't worry about that. And yeah, so coming up in a minute, Cunt and the Gang.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
A podcast from producerpaul.co.uk.
So, a reminder that this interview is with a comedy character. Some people might be offended. They might get offended by what gets said, or if you go investigating, you might be offended by some of the things you find. I'm just giving you a heads up. So here we go. Cunt and the Gang.
Hello.
Thank you for your patience.
Oh, that's all right. No worries. I fucking hate technical stuff. I'm fucking terrible at it.
And this thing is, I was doing something last night and someone went, oh, you just got to click this thing. And I'm like, what do you mean? Hold on a minute. They went, oh, come on, Grandad. I'm like, hold on. I've not done this before. If I gave you a combine harvester and I went, yeah, I'll drive that, you wouldn't be able to do that either. So why don't you pipe down?
No, this is the thing. It's like, it just makes you feel really fucking old and out of touch, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not. I'm fucking not.
But the problem is, right, I was fine with everything, but I was fine with everything about 17 or 18 years ago, and then they changed it. And every time I get fine with it, they just fucking change it again. Why can't I just keep things the same? It was all working fine with tapes, wasn't it? And then all these... It's bollocks, isn't it?
I know. Well, you get settled and you go, yeah, that'll do. That's enough. We don't need any more. And they go, oh, you need this now. This will improve your life. And it doesn't. It just gets in the way and causes arse ache.
No, I don't want to keep updating my operating system. I'm all right with that one.
It's fucking bollocks.
Oh, he's bollocks. Like, where'd you get time to do all that in amongst everything else? Like, fuck's sake.
I know, the world's on fire, and now I've got to update my fucking laptop. I've got to, you know, there's people trying to get over here in a dinghy, and you're telling me I've now got to update all my equipment because you've decided it's obsolete. Go fuck yourself.
No, but it's where all the money comes from nowadays, isn't it?
It is.
This is the trouble.
It is. Thank you for coming on. I know you're a busy man.
So fucking busy.
Yeah. How's it going?
Yeah, not too bad. I was sort of sitting around having a mince pie this morning thinking to myself, God, I'm really fucking busy, I am.
yeah, but you got your music going on. There's a bid to make you the Christmas number one.
Yeah. No, it's last couple of weeks have been quite busy. Like, you know, but it's the thing is, a lot of people, when they see me, they think the guy's a graceful swan. But what they don't realise is there's a lot of paddling goes on under the water to give that appearance, you know.
I get it, yeah.
And when, like, you know, when you do something like, you know, when you upload anything and then try and get people to buy it, there's a million fucking shit admin jobs before you can get to the good bit of everyone hearing the music, you know, and it's just, yeah, it's just loads of kind of crap things that I wish I could, I sort of wish I could palm it off on someone else. But unfortunately, do you know, I don't know. I think because I'm a control freak, you want someone else to do all the work for you, but then you'd be stood over their shoulder going, oh, they're not quite doing it how I do it.
Yes, exactly. And you're a perfectionist. I've heard your music. You know, you know what you want.
I know you've come to that conclusion, but, you know.
I was listening to it on the train and I'm like, right, all right, you can't listen to this out loud. What I like, though, is the honesty. There's an honesty to your music.
Well, it's, yeah.
You know, and that's what I love about it. I first became aware of you in Edinburgh a couple of years ago when there was stickers appearing on other people's posters.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's nearly 10 years ago now.
Is it 10 years? Fuck off.
10 years next year, yeah.
Fuck me. I thought it was like a couple of years ago.
No, 2011. So were you one of the angry ones that got a sticker on their poster, kind of like fist shaking and wait till I get my hands on him?
No, I didn't have a show. I was up there wandering around and just I heard all the stories. Going, who's this cunt? Who's this fucking cunt ruining my poster? And I'm like, I like him. Ruin all the posters.
I had a couple of because I don't really do all the fucking schmoozing and all that. And I had a couple of mates who had shows on up there and they just kept overhearing people in the bars going, if I get my fucking hands on him, you know, people were really, I didn't realise how angry it was going to make people. I didn't really think it through.
No, it was just you were doing your thing.
I just thought everyone would think it was a big jolly joke, just seeing all these cocks appear everywhere for the month. But then, you know, I thought that people had spent hundreds of pounds getting these great big glossy posters of their faces on these poster sites and that they wouldn't be amused by seeing a penis stuck next to their face.
But I tell you what's happened, though, because off the back of that, I think you're a pioneer because now having shows up there myself and speaking to people, people try to make their posters doodle-proof or cock-proof, or they go, they're aware now that something could happen to it. So I think you were like the start for all that.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I have to say, that particular year, there was people bending over, there was people with their mouths open, there was people with their hands, like, clasped down by their groin. You're just like, this is fucking, you know, pennies from heaven, this is. Yeah, get a cock on it.
But now, I've had, people are so aware of it. I'm not name dropping here, but I was talking to Rob Beckett a little while ago, and he was saying, like, he goes, I can't believe how stupid I was. Like, his first poster was him licking an ice cream. That's asking for it, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think what you've done, you've created, you've made people aware. You've got to make sure that their posters are doodle-proof, or at least, you know, be more aware of what you're putting out there.
Well, it's nice that I've ruined the naive charm of getting a poster designed for Edinburgh and made everyone paranoid about, you know, a big stiffy being stuck next to their face.
But then saying that, now I've spoken to you and it was, like you say, it's nearly 10 years ago, there'd be new people that weren't aware of that guerrilla warfare that was going on, that art that was happening. You were like the Banksy of, like, with your penises running around, whacking them all over the place.
Wanksy.
See, and I call myself a comedian.
But I stuck a few of them about, but the majority of them was because, you know, every year when you go up and do Edinburgh, the standard thing is you get 5,000 flyers printed.
Yeah.
That, you know, for the first couple of days you go and fly, you know, flyer people stood in queues and that, and then it just becomes really fucking dispiriting and you end up kind of just not bothering. No one comes to your shows and then you go home with like 3,500 flyers in a box or you just have to kind of stick them in a recycling site.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh, do you know what? I cannot be fucking going out and doing all that flyering again because I'm not the most social bloke. And so kind of going up to people and cold calling them with a flyer, you know, especially because it's called Cunt and the Gang, like you have to kind of try and spot people you think are going to like it. And
yeah,
I find that quite odd because you know, when you sort of look out at a typical audience in the gigs, you can't really second guess who's going to like it, because, you know, the people that like it. They might be old, they might be young. But, I mean, like, the YouTube stats say they're predominantly 95% male.
Right.
But I just think that's because, you know, the right women haven't heard it yet.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. Because I've played it to a few people and they've gone, "What the fuck is this?" I'm like, this is the future. And they go, "You're right. You fucking right. Cunt and the Gang is the future." I like the humour. I like the songs. I think it's great. But you couldn't play it at a wedding or a funeral. We could play it at a funeral, maybe.
I did have someone say that they played it at their mate's funeral. Was it last year?
Oh, right.
I'm trying to think what song it was. Whether it was one of the worst ones.
Yeah. So where did you get your inspiration from?
It sort of started off. I've sort of always done this, like, since I was a kid. Just, you know, like, change the words to songs and just, like, written silly songs about things. And our mutual mate, Stu.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were in a band together called Serious Problem, and so we'd just write these, you know, write these kind of silly songs, really, when we was like teenagers. And then from that, just kind of, you know, home recording. You know, I met a mate who kind of did home recording. And so, like, I just started making my own songs just on little keyboards and stuff. Then the internet came along. And I was sort of writing about, you know, like, if you sort of go down the pub with a group of mates, the kind of stuff that gets said that you wouldn't necessarily talk about at work or in polite conversation. Like, you know, things like washing your knob before you go out on the pool and just silly things like that. Because it sort of felt like no one had really set them kind of things to music. And so that was where it kind of started. Cunt and the Gang kind of started off, was just these little slice of life things that not everyone necessarily talked about in polite conversation, and just putting them to music.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that you mean these things you're saying. You're just trying to make everybody laugh by saying the most heinous thing.
That's right. I mean, and, you know, and something we've always done is deliberately taking a standpoint that's going to cause an argument, you know, whether you actually mean that or not. And once you've taken that standpoint, you have to kind of see it through, and you find yourself arguing with something that you completely fucking disagree with, you know, on every other night of the year. But because you've taken this ridiculous standpoint, you have to kind of stand by it. And, you know, that's all part of sort of being out and with your mates and having a drink and having a laugh and letting go, you know, it's just kind of arguing and bickering,
yeah,
because, you know, it's all kind of done in good faith and good humour. And of course, when you take one of these ridiculous samples, it gets brought up for fucking years afterwards.
Yeah, exactly, because people take it at face value and they're not really listening. And at the moment, everybody seems so earnest as well. Everyone's virtue signalling, everyone's got a thing they want to show that they're doing. And what do you make of all that?
I don't really, I mean, what I've always tried to do is just not worry about what everyone's up to and just do my own thing. And I've sort of done that since I was a kid, really.
Yeah.
Like, you know, as I kind of grown up, I realised, like, if you're looking at what other people have got and what other people are doing, you waste so much energy, you know, that you could just be, in, you know, channeling into doing your own creative things. And so I've always, like, I've had a bit of sort of creative tunnel vision, I suppose, just kind of get into doing something myself and then just, do as much of it as I can myself. Because the thing I like most is just, you know, sitting down in front of a computer and diddling around with little, like, you know, like advert kind of melodies and coming up with catchy melodies, then just putting some words to them, you know. And that's the thing I like doing most. And so I try and spend as much time as I can doing that. But unfortunately, like, you know, like I was saying, like, it's all the admin that surrounds it to get it out into the world that ends up taking your time. And with social media and stuff, you know, it's a bit of a time sapper.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of a creativity killer, because the more time you spend kind of looking for affirmation on social media, the less time you spend actually creating the thing and doing the thing that you really love doing.
Yeah, true. Very true. But growing up with a name like Cunt, I mean, that must have been, it's like a boy named Sue. It must have been hard for you.
It was hard. And I mean, obviously, you know, it's a nickname and people have to find ways around, you know, like it's very awkward, you know, at my nan's funeral and stuff when I gave the eulogy. you know, people find ways around it, you know, call me Kay or whatever. Because me and my mate Gels have been doing these like a series of picture books, sort of aimed at kids and you know, and adults that ain't really grown up. And yeah. So I had to kind of adopt a pseudonym for doing them.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, probably if you've got the word cunt, even if it is spelt with a K all over the front of a kid's book, it kind of is, yeah, it's a bit of a an ambition killer, isn't it?
Yeah, you're putting the brakes on that immediately, aren't you?
Yeah, because you know Julia Donaldson, her name was actually Julia Minge, and she changed it.
Yeah, right. Well, she would have had to. I mean, yeah, again, you know, you got that. I mean, because that, ironically, it probably would have been the best, you know, the best kids' book going. They would have gone mad for it. But
well, exactly. The kids like it.
Yeah.
The kids fucking love it. The kids are cunt this, cunt that. They fucking love it. But it's, you know, it's the fuddy duddy adults, isn't it? The exactly. Snowflake adults.
I can imagine when they see you in the street, you're running down the road behind you. It's like Ringo when he was running away from all the Beatle fans, you know, and they're shouting cunt at you, and you're like, I gotta go, and yeah, it must be carnage for you whenever you go out.
It's a popular misconception that it's me chasing kids because it's normally groups of kids chasing me.
Yeah, exactly. You're getting groomed by children. That's a dark path to start getting into.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no. This ain't a dark web kind of podcast, is it?
I've got a feeling this might be, though. This might be. This is what I wanted to talk to you because this, talking to you, you're a like-minded individual, cunt.
For the last few years of gigging, you'd have people come up and say, oh, we're the same, me and you. And then just say the most, you know, the most horrendous fucking, yeah. fucking thing. Like, you know, like I'd given them a free pass to kind of, you know.
Say the worst thing
you could possibly think of.
I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. There's a comedian, people come up and they tell you the worst joke ever. And they go, yeah, and then there's that classic line, you can use that. They go, where can I use that? Except for a clam rally. Where can I use that? Are you fucking kidding? You know, it's people have this weird, like you've just said, people just assume, he's going to want to hear this. And even you go, fucking wish you hadn't said that. But that's a common misconception. It people miss when they listen to your stuff. They miss the humour in it, the nuance. Some take it at face value.
I can see why people would miss the humour and nuance because sort of when I first started doing it, I did make a conscious decision that I was just going to swear as much as I could, you know, just to the point where you didn't even notice it was swearing anymore. You know, rather than kind of holding it back for a special occasion, I just thought, do you know what, fuck it. If I want to say fuck it, I'll say fuck it. And so I never really held back on anything. But I think that does kind of give people, you know, you sort of leave yourself with nowhere to go. In a way, and I did. I especially found that kind of coming up to when I sort of knocked it on the head in 2016. Once I'd written my song, you know, about kidnapping my fictional paper boy, you sort of think, well, where do I actually fucking go from now?
Yeah.
And it was only kind of after having a couple of years off, you sort of realise, well, actually, you don't have to. You haven't got to go anywhere from there and make it worse. You've just got to do what you do and do it well. So if I come back and do another album in the future, it won't be trying to make it worse than the Jimmy Savile song. It'll be about just trying to craft really good comedy songs, which is sort of what I always try to do. But then you've got in the back of your mind, well, I said that on the last tour, so I've got to ramp it up a bit. Otherwise, people will just think I've gone soft.
Yeah, you've now created this thing that you've got to lug around, and yeah, you become the sort of the victim to your own success because you've, like you say, people have come to you with these songs, and a lot of people will just listen to it and go, oh my God, this is not musically, but lyrically, this is probably some of the worst things I've ever heard said out loud. But then you go, other people go, this is it, this speaks to me, I need more. And then you're like, I can't do any more. That's just, you know what I mean? It's, where do I go? Do I actually have to carry out these heinous crimes in order for you to still listen to my albums? And of course, there's a line there, you know?
Well, I always thought that'd probably be the best, you know, if I kind of ended up like Charles Manson, that would probably be like the best career move ever, because I'm never going to get any mainstream publicity. So, you know, at least that would kind of get, you know, it'd mean a load of new people found out about us, and I could kind of, you know, while serving me time, I could, you know, reap in the royalties from a whole new audience.
And it's probably an untapped audience, to be fair. There's not a lot of songs for monsters like that.
I had this guy come up on one of my gigs in Leicester, in the last couple of years of doing it, and saying, he said, "Can you have a selfie with me and me mate?" And I went, "Yeah, right then." And he's called a picture up of his mate on his phone. And I'm like, "Hold on, is that your mate?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Well, I'm not having a picture with him if he's not here." And he's he said that he's in prison. And what? You know, you're like, just out of morbid curiosity, I'm like, "What's he in prison for?" And he said, "Murder."
Christ.
And it just got, every fucking question, it just got darker and darker. And you're like, "Oh." And he said, "But he was a big fan of you, though." And, you know, like,
oh, my God.
I know, it's one of the worst things I've ever heard.
Fucking hell. That's because that's the thing. They don't realise that you're, even though your name's Cunt and you sing about what you sing about, you do give a fuck and things do affect you.
Yeah, of course, I think it's when you kind of, when you take on one of these one-word nicknames, you know, like Bono and Sting.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously I've fallen into the trap of that.
Well, this is it. Yeah, you're like Kylie.
In a lot of ways, yeah.
But what do you make about all this now? Because this podcast is fundamentally a mental health podcast. You know, we talk about we don't sit and talk about actual mental health. What we talk about, we tell our stories, and from that people can take whatever they take from listening to other people. It makes people sort of realise that they're not alone. They go, "Oh, yeah, I've been through that. I felt like that sometimes." What do you make of all this now? Now we're all having these conversations about mental health.
It can only be a good thing, can't it? You know, talking about how you feel.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and especially kind of since lockdown, because I've got to say, it wasn't really something I thought about, you know, because I've never, I suppose like when I was maybe sort of in my 20s, I went through a phase of, I never went out anywhere. And I kind of, you know, and that sort of lasted like 4 or 5 years. And sort of looking back, maybe it was a bit of social anxiety, but, you know, I'm not looking to fucking pin a label on something, but, you know, maybe that's what it was. But I don't know, like, I've never sort of suffered from depression or anything, but since lockdown, you know, I started to think, well, you know, wellness is a fucking thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd never really thought about it, but wellness is a fucking thing. And if you you've got, like, you know, because obviously, like, if you're a comedian or a performer, you do kind of get something from social interaction. And you know, and like, even if you're not, you do get something from social interaction. And so when that's sort of a big part of your life and it's kind of and it's taken away, you need to replace it with something, because, you know, so, like, this is why, like, you know, sort of, I'll go and walk every day and you see people, you know, like, you see people walking every day. And I just think it's a big thing. A big part of being well is just getting outside, and, like, outside of your four walls, getting some breath in your lungs and stretching your legs. And, so that's what I've kind of done sort of since lockdown's come along. And it has just made me think, you do kind of need, you know, you need things like that to keep yourself well, and, you know, and also just fucking not taking on too much, and, you know, all those things are important.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that, and we do need that. We do need the interaction with other people. And that's what's, like you say, when that gets taken away, we're fine. It's all very well. I don't mind being on my own. I've said this before, but I think it's because I know I've got people to go back to. I know I'm not on my own completely.
Yeah.
So I don't know how people, there must be people out there, obviously people out there that are on their own all the time. And of course that starts to mess with your head. You know, that's you need that interaction with others just to keep us going.
I mean, yeah, when I was doing these kind of like live feeds through YouTube in the first lockdown, and was doing that every night. And, you kind of realise that there's a lot of people, you know, especially in that first lockdown, that were just could, because none of us knew how contagious this fucking thing was, you know, we didn't know anything about it, and no one knew anything about it. And we didn't know how long we were going to be stuck indoors. And so I started doing these live feeds, and this little kind of community of people kind of sprung up. And I think some of them had heard of us before, and others were kind of new to it. And so, like, there's like a little sort of support network sprung up from it, you know, and you'd sort of see them all interacting online and got a little group and stuff, you know. And I think it's just good to fucking connect with people, you know, when you're feeling isolated. Connecting with people is just really important.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. This, the internet, I'll tell you what, I don't know how we would have functioned without it. It's been a lifesaver.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't, like, at first I couldn't really see, because I meet up with a couple of mates sort of, you know, regularly, I suppose every few weeks or every month, and sort of have a beer and just all catch up on what we've been doing. And I was sort of wondering how that was going to work, doing it over Zoom, because we, you know, done a few kind of Zoom beers. And within 5 minutes, you know, you all just slip back into your old roles, and you sort of forget you sat there at a computer, you know, and sort of 4 hours later, we're all just pissed out of our heads.
Sat
in our sheds on our own. You know? But I fucking love that about it, that, you know, that actually it's not the medium you're connecting with people. It's the people you connect with, isn't it?
Yeah, this is true. We did a drunk cast. So it was with Stu and Chris. Scroobius Pip was on it, and my Mrs. Jade. And we were all in separate rooms, and we're all doing it. And again, like you've just said, I'm like, oh, how's this going to go? And by the end of it, we were bollocksed. And we were laughing so much. It was fucking hysterical. And it didn't feel like we were in separate rooms. Even like I was in the bedroom, my missus is in the lounge. Scroob was where he is, and Chris and Stu, they were where they were. But it was like we were all in the same room. It was mad.
Yeah, because you just resume them relationships you got previous, don't you?
Yeah. I remember one night, me and my missus and my mate, we were living together, and they weren't, I was like, oh, come on, let's get on it. And they wouldn't have it. They weren't having it. They're like, no, we're not doing that. And they ended up, I started messaging on Facebook going, oh, these pricks won't dance with me. And started putting up what music I was playing. And then people went, oh, mate, go live. And I went, all right. So I went live. And there was a load of us. And we were all chucking suggestions at each other about music and chatting. It was a lovely moment. It was really nice.
That, yeah.
Yeah. When you first started recording, and you know, were you worried about the reception that your first recordings were going to get, or you just went, I stand by these songs. I know what they're about. I know what's going on. If you don't get it, then it's on you.
Do you know what? I think that was the attitude that I always took. And when we were doing, you know, when me and Stu were doing Serious Problem, it was always, this is what we do. If you don't like it, you don't have to listen to it. You know, just
yeah.
You know, and so I don't know. I kind of think I've always had that attitude, like since I've been a teenager. This is what I do. If you don't like it, just go and fucking do something else. You know, I'm not making you listen to it.
Yeah.
There's been a few songs over the years that I've either gone to play, or I've played and it's felt a bit edgy, because especially like in the early years of gigging, it was all free entry gigs, right. You know, and you'd just be playing either in the back room of a pub or in the main bit of a pub.
Yeah.
And so you'd just be, there'd be people that had just kind of gone out for a night, you know, and be confronted with this kind of barrage of filth set to an 80s synth pop backing track. And obviously not everyone, when they're on a night out, wants to hear that. And so, like, it had, you know, I noticed quite quickly that the people that didn't like it made them really angry.
Right.
And so there was times when I kind of ducked out of doing certain songs just because, you know, just for my own personal safety, you know.
Yeah.
And then other times you'd kind of do them and, you know, I got a bloke through a glass at us and ended up, like, you know, half a dozen times just ended up grappling on stage with someone that didn't like the songs. And see, it sort of, that happened sort of, you know, it maybe only happened once every tour, but when you did the next tour, that's what you'd remember from the last tour.
Yeah.
And, you know, because ultimately, I don't want to spend a gig fighting with someone on stage. What I'd like is to be you know, acclaimed and then carried aloft on everyone's shoulders.
You know, of course, that's what we all want.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, what else would you start doing it? But, yeah, there's a couple of times when you just end up grappling with people. And I remember one instance in Cardiff. I had this song called Wanking Over a Pornographic Polaroid of an ex-girlfriend who died. Right. And in it was kind of this wanking and crying mime where I'd just go, and have this kind of foam penis, you know, that I sort of masturbate while going along the backing tracks.
Right.
And I could see, so that happened kind of three times in the choruses. And in the bits in between, I could see this woman just getting herself more and more angry.
Mm.
Then just before the last chorus, she's just made a break for the stage and she's jumped at me, and like where she's drunk, she's just like thrown half a pint down my leg and then just stacked it. And then she's got up and tried to rip me. And so I managed to kind of just get her onto the floor and I just sat on her. But like being a consummate professional, I finished the song, right. just sat on her back wanking and crying. And she was just made her more angry. She was fucking,
oh God.
She was fucking livid. But yeah, that was one of the nicer stories, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, just, you know, keeping an eye out for potential assailants, just it isn't conducive to enjoying a gig, you know.
And these early gigs, people wouldn't really have gone there to specifically see you?
No, I mean, but it was kind of, that was the case maybe, you know, for the first sort of 7 or 8 years, is there was a lot of pubs booked us. And so you'd kind of get a hardcore of people who knew exactly what to expect, who'd seen you a couple of times, and they'd be looking around at, because this was a sport for the people that come and saw us repeated times. It was a sport for them to look around and see other people's reactions who hadn't seen us before.
Yeah.
And so you'd have a mix of people that, you know, the hardcore people that liked you, the people that had seen the posters and what have you and thought, oh, I'll give that a go. And then other people that were just in there for a drink. And so, you know, when it went really well, you'd feel like you'd won everyone over. Mm. But then when it went, you know, it would only take one or two people, you know, shouting and hollering or coming up and arguing with you while in between songs and stuff just to kill the vibe, because yeah. You know, I've always had a bit of a red mist kind of temper that I think I get right. That I get from my dad, and so you're trying to kind of, you know, because the whole kind of thing on stage was I had a very cheeky affable demeanor, you know, because I always thought you could kind of get away with saying more if you kind of deliver it like a kids' TV presenter, you know, like the jazz hands and kind of, it's okay, everyone, you know. Then when you kind of end up grappling with someone, obviously, you know, the human fight or flight thing kicks in.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you're having to then carry on the gig and sing a song called Wank the Dog with the Red Mist,
yeah.
Which is very hard to do.
You can't just shrug it off and get on with what you were doing. You're all out of sync and you're all, like you say, you're angry as well. You want to just
belt someone, yeah.
Yeah. And you can't. You've got to be all did again.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Which is hard work. But so did you have a good relationship with your parents?
Yeah. So, I mean, this was the kind of, my mum and dad were sort of 21 when they had us. So they were always quite young and cool. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I always got on well with me mum and dad, and they were pretty easygoing, really. And yeah, my dad was quite a strong character. Yeah, and I suppose my mum was as well. Like, you know, quite sort of independent minded, and I think that kind of rubbed off on me a bit.
Because you're definitely walking your own path. There's no one doing what you're doing.
That was the weird thing, kind of when I started gigging around the country. I thought I was going to find lots of people doing what I was doing. And then you realise quite quickly there weren't, you know. And,
no.
And like, that was actually a real surprise, because I've always had this, when you have an idea, you think, oh, fuck, I've got to get that down quickly before someone else thinks about it. And then, like, you know, after about 10 years of doing it, you're like, just no one else wants to write songs about the bloke from the Lost Prophets, you know.
No.
I can, it doesn't matter if I do it this week or next week. No one else is going to do it in the interim period because no one else fucking wants to.
No, not at all. We so it was a playlist we had on Spotify the other week. I'm doing this, I've got this day job that I'm working with these lovely lads, and Lost Prophets came on, and we were kind of busy doing what we were doing. And then we suddenly realised what was happening, and we all went, oh, fuck, and we switched it off. And there was a moment's silence where we just sort of stood there, just, what have we done? it was like we'd sullied ourselves with that stuff.
But it was the fact that it was on your playlist with Rolf Harris and Gary Glitter. That was...
yeah. Who's putting nonce into Spotify? Yeah.
I went with my little nephew to see, you know, like one of these Father Christmas experiences.
Yeah.
And while we're all waiting there, like, you know, got a live reindeer and like a little fucking pony and what have you, for you to stroke. And Gary Glitter's Rock and Roll Christmas has come on. This was only like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow. I mean, you know, I like the fact that Christmas is all about forgiving. And so there's a nonce amnesty.
I think what it is that people aren't actually listening. There's the people that work there don't want to be there. They're not listening. They've tuned out years ago. So you're wandering. I remember wandering around Asda and you've got a Gary Glitter blaring out. And you're like, they're not. They've just gone, right, it's Christmas. Let's just put this fucking playlist back on. It's probably on a CD somewhere. They just go, oh, just play on that. No one cares. Yeah. And that's what it is. They're not even listening to it anymore. They don't even realise.
No, but it's nice that, you know, it's nice in the season of goodwill that Gary gets a few royalties his way. Like, you know, he's done a lot of wrong, admittedly. But, you know, you got to feel sorry for, is it Mike Leander, the bloke who co-wrote all the songs with him?
Yeah.
You know, he's fucking mate, you know, because Rock and Roll Christmas, that was one of them ones, wasn't it, that was on all the Christmas playlists.
Yeah. So
every year he'd get his royalty check, and then like all of a sudden one year, he's only getting 30p from South Hockingdon Garden Centre.
Yeah, and I do feel, that's it, it's like with the Lost Prophets boys. I feel for them because they weren't doing what that horrible cunt did. But
no.
Now they're all fucked and now they've actually lost profits. It's not on, is it?
No. And all they did, you know, at worst, was turn a blind eye to it. I reckon they were more like, oh, that's just Ian. Don't worry about him.
Is that what you think?
No, I don't fucking
think. Imagine that. It's funny when I said that I've got cunt coming on, cunt in the gang. And a couple of mates went, and how are you going to do with that? I mean, oh, we'll find out what we say first.
Yeah, we'll have a chat.
Yeah.
We'll go back, we'll listen to it, and then we'll scrap it.
And then we'll have it as a limited edition vinyl. But that's it. It's just gallows humour, isn't it? You know, we've lots of, there's people I know that have experienced some awful stuff, but the way they cope with it is by taking the piss out of it. I remember doing some gigs for the troops coming back from Afghanistan, and they'd been wounded, blown up, and it was awful. But I remember talking to them before we did the gig, and so they were saying some horrendous things to each other. You know, they were like, oh, yeah, you think you got it bad. Like, you've still got your arms and legs. That's where they were taking the piss out of each other.
But that's our, you know, that is in us as humans. That's how we fucking cope in bleak times, you know. And you know, I think when you think about, you know, the Jimmy Savile stuff and the Watkins stuff, it's so fucking bleak.
Yeah.
So what do? Just sweep it under the carpet. Like you've got to find a route to humour, I think, because, you know, it's that fucking bleak, and we all know it's bleak, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not out there saying, oh, it's really funny what Jimmy Savile did, because clearly it's. Oh, although I have to say that, did you see the documentary where the lady said he walked in her house, dropped his trousers, and said, "How's about that then?" Like, I'm not saying it was funny, but you know, out of all of it, that was the funniest bit. But no, it's obviously fucking dreadful. But what you're going to do? It's happened. You can't change it. You know, all you can do is, and I think by not talking about it, you know, there's more likelihood for something like that to happen again. But you can't tell me, like, now, with all the publicity and stuff surrounding the Jimmy Savile thing, that that's ever going to happen again at the BBC, and, you know, and all those people in power will be turning a blind eye and going, oh, that's just Jimmy. And, you know, the world's moved on. And because he's out in the open, you know,
yeah.
there's more scrutiny towards these things, and that can only be a good thing, you know, and I'd like to take a lot of the credit for that.
I think rightly so. Squarely in your lap.
That's what Jimmy said.
You're a pioneer. Again, see, look, you don't even realise, inadvertently, you've been changing lives. Like you've said, I'm not saying that's a good thing. But how we can cope with it, this horrendous thing, is by taking the piss out of it.
Yeah, exactly, because it takes the power out of it, you know.
Yeah, it's awful that it happened. So I used to do some stuff on stage about paedophiles, about the fact that there was a lot of them around when I was a kid. And there was someone I was with that had had a really horrible experience when they were a kid. And I spoke to them about it. Like, they'd watched me do it loads. And I said, what do you think about it? And they went, no, it's fine. I'm not offended by it at all. Because I wasn't bigging up paedophiles.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah, because no one's going to stand there on stage and say, ain't it brilliant, paedophiles ruining kids' childhood.
Yeah.
Yes, no, of course not. Yeah, so I think the idea of a grown man finding kids sexy.
Yeah.
Is just so fucking bizarre that if you can't find something funny in it, you know, it's bizarre and fucking bleak. So, yeah, but yeah.
I think people miss that sometimes, listening to your stuff. If they're taking it at face value and they go, oh, well, how can you be doing this?
I'm definitely going to quote you, Rich, on my posters saying, a little too subtle. Rich Wilson.
Yeah. It's too nuanced. If blinking, you'll miss it. But that's why I wanted to get you on and have a chat with you.
Oh, cheers.
Just, I wanted to talk about the man behind the music.
Oh, cheers, Rich.
Yeah. What's happening next? You got the bid for number one. Is that you doing that, or is that someone else who's taking it?
No, it was someone, because I did a couple of chart campaigns back, you know, sort of 10 years ago. Did one for me song, Use My Arsehole as a Cunt, and then one to coincide with the wedding of William and Kate, my song Fucksticks. So I did a Royal Wedding version of it. And they finished up at Use My Arsehole as a Cunt got a number 66 and Fucksticks got a number 63. But it was just me, you know, just putting messages up on my Facebook from my bedroom, you know, and like, so getting the top 75 was a big, you know, a big
thing. It's massive.
This was my two ambitions as a kid, was to write a sitcom and have a one-hit wonder. And, you know, and I've realised neither of them, but, you know, getting into the top 75 is in the Guinness Book of British, or the Virgin Book of British Hit Singles, you know, the listings in there. So, you know, it's good. So, it was just, so I did this punk album called Cunts Punk In Your Face, and we were just about to kind of start sorting some gigs out and that, and then lockdown happened. And one of the songs on there was obviously this Boris Johnson is a fucking cunt. And where it was just kind of up on Spotify, someone just sent us a link and said, here, look at this. And Charlie Brooker had put Christmas number one on his Twitter and a link to Boris Johnson is a fucking cunt. And Ginger from the Wild Arts and Miles Hunt from the Wonder Stuff. And then the singer from Arab Strap and a couple of other people, got on board with it. And, you know, you think, do you know what? Might as well just get on board with this and give it a go for no other reason other than, you know, and this was the same reason why I did the other chart attempts. Like, what would it be like if fucking Reggie Yates had to read out Use My Arsehole as a Cunt? You know, and I just think Boris Johnson is such a cunt.
Yeah.
Like, but I don't think anyone's ever told him. I don't think he knows. So I just like the idea of him, you know, and his fiance, and you know, and his 18 kids all sat around in their various homes listening to the Christmas charts, you know, and then all of a sudden this song pops, you know, clearly it's not going to fucking get played on the radio, but they'll have to mention it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just want to know. I want to know how they're going to deal with it. Yeah, how are you going to announce that? Are you just going to go, and at number 38, and at number 37, want to be like, you can't just fuck it, he's a cunt, and you can't gloss over it.
No.
So let's just let him know. That's the whole point behind doing it, because you don't make loads of money doing these things, because, you know, by the time, you know, your distributors and what have you are taking their cut of it, and you paid the people to make the videos and all these kind of things, You never make loads of money, you know, and the time you put into it, you know, if it, like the previous two campaigns, the time I put into it and all the expenses mean that by the time you get out of it, you have a few hundred quid, which is, you know, is a bit of a drink, and that's it really.
Yeah.
But it's just about, this is the way I've always looked at things. You might as well fucking do it, because if you don't do it, you sort of sit, you know, you end up thinking, oh, I wish I'd done that.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, you know, oh, fuck it. Do you know what? Just give it a go. Might come to nothing. If people like it, they're going to buy it. If they don't like it, then basically they're complicit in everything Boris Johnson has done, and they're going to have to accept some responsibility for the 65,000 people that have died.
Yeah.
But if you don't feel like that, just buy it.
Yeah, 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 you're right, you're right. Trouble is, he's such a cunt, he'd probably get on board with it.
I don't know, what he'll do is he'll just say, yeah, I've heard that, and I think we all just need to move on from it. He's got a way of getting away with things, hasn't he? Like, I don't know how he fucking does it, you know, but he just says, I think we all just need to move on. And then all of a sudden, you've all just moved on. You're like, well, but hold on.
Yeah.
But your crony's got all the fucking we moved on from that. Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. He smashed it on Have I Got News For You, and that's why he's where he is. But he's just got, like you say, he's got his air about him. He just has this, he's just, oh, it's just this bumbling idiot. And you go, no, mate, you've really fucked up.
Yeah, but he's a clever fucking construct, that bumbling idiot, because underneath it's something really fucking sinister.
Yeah, yeah.
He's worse than Watkins in a lot of ways.
Fuck me.
He's right up there.
And all this, oh yeah, we can, everyone can unlock what they're doing for Christmas. You go, well, what about Eid? What about Diwali, when you shut everything down then?
I mean, he's in a fairly thankless position in that, like, you know, he's sort of damned if he does and damned if he don't. So I'm very much of the opinion, like, he's been such a cunt, let's just kick him when he's down.
Right.
You know, and when he's down, let's just keep on kicking him.
Well, someone said to me the other day, I was doing something, and I went, oh, Boris is a fucking wanker. And they whispered in my ear, they go, you're going to alienate a lot of the people that are listening to what you're doing. And I'm like, but he is a wanker, though.
No, this is the thing, is I've got a couple of mates who say he's a... I think he's done he's done as good a job as anyone could have done under very difficult circumstances.
Yeah.
You're like, right, so, but say other people would have struggled, you know, because it's an unusual fucking time, isn't it? You know, like, we've never known anything like it. And, yeah, you know, it must be hard to know what the fucking hell to do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's still been turning a blind eye to his ministers fucking, you know, handing out contracts to their mates. And, like, it's just so fucking dodgy. You know, but there's a way of burying bad news when something fucking terrible's going on, isn't there? And I think that's what's happened all the way through this, is, well, don't look at that, look at this, you know, something really fucking terrible going on. And so, yeah. You know, it's like they make hay while the sun is behind the cloud, if that's a thing. I mean, I don't like talking about politics a lot, because I've already alienated half of my fucking, half of my support. The problem is we're handed these two choices, and it's like, you know, right, so, you know, and we're constantly told, but if you don't vote for them, they'll get in. So anything new or different is automatically, you know, and also the system is set up just for it to be, conservative usually, and Labour sometimes, and there's never going to be anything different. And the only people that can change the system are the people that are fucking reaping all the benefits from the system. And they're not going to be turkeys voting for Christmas. The system's never going to fucking change. Like, and that's the thing that I find really, really fucking disheartening.
Yeah.
We're stuck with the Tories and we're stuck with Labour. And then, you know, when Labour get in, they have to become more like the Tories to get in.
Yeah.
And, you know, so...
Yeah.
Who'd you fucking, you know, it's like voting for the difference between a shit sandwich and spunk on chips. Like, yeah. I don't want either of them.
That's true, isn't it? I give a fuck about people. I do, all people. And it breaks my heart that we still live in a world where they want to split us down the middle and go, you're either this or you're that.
But that's how it works, isn't it? It's divide and conquer.
Yeah.
And especially kind of since social media and since the internet became a thing, arguments are just more extreme and they're more black and white, aren't they? Because you have to, if someone else is taking that view, you have to kind of take the exact opposing view, and the idea that you can meet in the middle is seen as a weakness. So
yeah,
it's a bleak fucking vision of the future.
I know. There's no grey area of anybody.
No, but you know, life ain't really like that, is it? There's massive fucking grey areas in everything. But it's like we're forced to choose between black and white all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And there's more to it than that. There's more to it than that. And that's why I wanted to have you on and talk to you. And this has been lovely. Thank you for coming on.
No, my pleasure.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too, Rich. Insane
in the membrane. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.